This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the speedy voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Super quick, Matthew, super quick. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Very good. We're going to be quick today, aren't we? Because the round of 16 is upon us. It's actually taking place a few hours from when we record this. So we thought we'd quickly just blitz through that last round of group games and get that done.
Yes, indeed. And there is a lot to talk about, it has to be said. It's been a really interesting few days. So we had to do the podcast today. That was a non-negotiable. But yeah, we're going to make it nice, short, concise, and then get ourselves ready for the last 16.
Rapid is what we're going to... Is that one of your fortes? Ever been referred to as speedy before in your life?
No.
Richard, quick?
Not really. No, there's... when I was younger, one of the reasons I was put in goal as a youngster was that that wasn't a strength, which you do often find, actually. Like, as younger... younger goalkeepers that progress, so many, it's kind of by accident, which was the case with me. I couldn't run very fast, but I enjoyed throwing myself on the floor and was quite powerful. So there you go. Were you speedy? Because you always talk to me about how you used to play football to a level.
I mean, I rarely talk to you about how I played football to a level, but that's fine. I was actually quite quick, yes. England trials, England schools for 100 metres, 200 metres if you're asking, and triple jumps. So,
wow.
You know. Not a big deal.
Wow, check you. I mean, you don't look like you'd be fast.
Brilliant. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Right, okay, so we left it to after the final day of the final round of group games. We anticipated drama. We got drama. We're going to start in Group H, where we can tail off the bits we weren't able to cover last time out as well. Mad scenes involving Ghana and Uruguay, South Korea, and Portugal. We're going to focus first on Lawrence Ati-Zigi. Now, we should bear in mind he was the third choice goalkeeper for Ghana at the tournament. Jojo Wollacott and Richard Ofori both ruled out through injury. He played for St Helens in Switzerland. He's played a lot of football in the past 3 years or so, and he made a lot of saves in this tournament, 12 in total across the three group games and a couple of corkers yesterday.
Yeah, I like him. It's fair to say he's unorthodox in that, look, he's incredibly agile, incredibly athletic. I mean, one of the saves in particular he made, the one that it's a brilliant save, reaction save that he's tipped over the bar. But I've never quite seen anyone do what he did in that he's so powerful in making the save and so athletic, he's almost landed on his head. He's literally gone fully over, 180, landed on his head, could have really hurt himself. Thankfully, he didn't. But I was going to say, he certainly, and because of that, it was quite interesting. I know that when you've sent me a lot of the footage over and I was going through, going back over a lot of the saves that he made, and there's a lot of comments from commentators. When a goalkeeper plays like this, you do often get the almost the camera save kind of comment, that sort of line of commentary. But I think a lot of it with this, when you actually watch how he plays, he's like a coiled spring, and the amount of saves that he'll make where he just explodes, and sometimes he doesn't necessarily need to explode as much as he does, but I think when you are trained in that sort of way that you're just ready to go every time, then sometimes even the balls that aren't necessarily at full stretch, you're already so primed to make the save, so primed to explode and to try and go full stretch, that sometimes it can look that little bit elaborate. But I actually really enjoyed his performance.
I'm intrigued by this theatrical nature of goalkeeping that some commentators describe it as you've just referenced there, because is it that they are theatrical? There was a save by Jan Sommer from Rodrigo in the Switzerland-Brazil game a few days earlier, pretty similar, but nothing really mentioned there. And I don't know, I guess it brings about a bigger debate, really, right? We've seen, yep, the likes of Barsham for Qatar, Alawais for Saudi Arabia, who at some moments, I guess, appear quite extroverted in how they play. But I've been thinking about this a lot. Is it that they are extroverted, or is it simply because we don't see that style as much? We don't see as many goalkeepers from Africa and Asia.
Right, so I think there's two parts to this. I think, one, if you are an incredibly powerful goalkeeper, there are going to be times when you make saves and you're going to be, you know, several feet off the air, and it's going to look quite extravagant. The other part to it is, and I actually do believe this, is that to some extent it gets trained out of you. Because I think, whether we're talking not just British culture, maybe European culture, you know, you have this idea and you like this idea of creating a goalkeeper that makes everything look so simple. Now, that's fine. But if you think about it logically, when a shot's being taken, the goalkeeper does whatever they need to do to get themselves into position first and foremost, but then to set in a way so they're ready to explode. And I'm trying to think of a good example. In fact, you mentioned earlier that apparently you used to do a bit of triple jump, apparently. So if that's the case, you'll know that when you're running and you're about to jump, again, this might be alien to you because I don't know if you did do triple jump, but let's say you did. So when you're running and you're about to explode, you've got to generate as much power in that leg in order to go, and it's, you actually do with triple jump, you go, if you're right-footed, for instance, you'll go jump off the right. I don't know if you know this, but then your next one will be off the right. Then you go off the left, and then you land in the sandpit. This is completely new to you, isn't it? I can see the look on your face.
Oh, completely new. Don't know whether you know this, but you go off your second jump with the same leg as you jump off initially. No way. Really?
Right. Wow. But the point being is that, of course, in that moment, your run-up, it's not about the run-up necessarily. It's about that moment when you explode. And it's kind of the same thing for a goalkeeper. You get yourself into a position and you set in such a way that you're ready to go into the top corner. And so sometimes, and this being a great example where he is incredibly athletic, so powerful, you can see that he moves really nicely, really fluid in his movement, sets really well, and explodes. Now, that's great. When it's going in the top corner, of course, he'll get the plaudits. When it doesn't, he'll always get the camera save. But then, can you find that balance in between? Now, some would argue that you can. I think a lot of the time when you're a goalkeeper like this, you can't necessarily, because you're so ready to explode and to try and go full stretch. When it's maybe slightly inside, you're almost still diving full stretch. And the saves are good. Like the saves that he actually made, we look at the end result, it was always good. He was always getting it into a safe area. He was getting good distance on the parry. But of course, then the ball's 20 yards away and he's still in the air. Then you get the commentators that will make the kind of lazy comments that he's made a little bit much of it.
Okay, well, in that Ghana-Uruguay game, there were a couple of decent saves too from Sergio Rochette, late one low to his right, and a first-half penalty, which took quite a while to be given and quite a while to be taken by Andre Ayew as well. Penalty or no penalty first?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it's, by the way, it's a brilliant bit of skill. He's bought the penalty, let's be honest, but you know, I think as goalkeepers know, we now know that it is, unfortunately, if you don't get enough of the ball or you don't get the ball and they manage to tow it past you and collide into you, which is what they look to do. And it's, yeah, look, whether I agree with that or not, that's a different conversation. But we kind of know that if they can get the ball away from you and collide with you, they're going to win the penalty. And in fairness to him, when you watch it in super slow motion, I didn't realise at first glance just how good the skill was, you know, to lift it so quickly and to get it. Because actually, I don't mind what Rochette did there, because I think most goalkeepers do the same thing. You know, it's a difficult first save. It's got away from him and he's chased it, but I don't think he's chased it rashly. I think that he thinks he can get there and it really is a 50-50. But I think in this particular instance, you've got to credit the striker. It's a brilliant bit of skill to get it over him and manage to collide with the goalkeeper.
Had a feeling he was going to save it though.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. What's this? Was this because of the feeling you got between the two, because of how the striker was looking?
Yeah, I think all the games before the penalty, it took so long for the decision to be made, and then it took ages for it to actually be taken. The fact that the Ghana player... By the way, we have to stop this nonsense, this playground nonsense of players forming a circle around the penalty spot to stop the opposition players from digging out the penalty spot. It's so childish and mad that it seems to happen with every game now. It's like the first thing, as soon as a penalty is given, the opposition players are like, right, we need to dig away at the penalty spot so the attacker scuffs his penalty. But you could just tell as well, there was something in Andre Ayew. We always say, right, you can see it in the players' eyes and their facial expressions. You just thought he's not confident here. And then his run-up as well, his approach was so slow. And it was a poor penalty, but he's got to be there to save it, Rochette.
Yeah, and he's read the situation well, made a good save. Look, I think this is all part of the theatre, though, isn't it? This is all part of it now where, look, we've said it so many times that a penalty now is so heavily weighted in a striker's favour. Although that being said, and I haven't actually shown you this, I saw some interesting statistics on Sky Sports this morning. I'll send it to you, actually, Max. I know you'll enjoy this. But in terms of where penalties are taken in the goal and the percentage that are scored, interestingly, middle of the goal, if it's high or middle, 100%. Success rate, and if it's then low in the middle of the goal, then obviously there's a chance the keeper can save it with their feet. But ordinarily, if middle or high, it's saved. And it is those, if you were to break the goal down, if you can imagine that you've got 15 squares in the goal, so you've got five in the bottom, five in the middle, five at the top. So naturally, it's those three squares in the middle, on the bottom, they're the most popular ones for a save, and the one middle second in on the left, second in on the right. Of course, if you're getting it right in the corner, it's 90% plus ordinarily that you're scoring, but it is that one. If you're not quite hitting the corner, I think with the goalkeepers, especially the goalkeepers in this World Cup, so powerful, the majority of them, they're going to cover a large percentage of the goal. They're going to dive mid ordinarily, which then gives them the option of saving low, saving mid. So it is that. So it's what I would say is that if you're, unless you're an Ivan Toney and you've got that technique nailed, which I still think is by far the best technique for a penalty taker to use, if you're not one of them and you're more of Harry Kane, and where Harry Kane's very good is that he does ordinarily hit right in the corner, although even Harry Kane, you know, there's been a few that he's missed when he hasn't quite hit the corner. But I think it is that, I think, and you're right, the more time there is between the penalty being given, the penalty being taken, there's more time for the striker to think, which then for a goalkeeper, you're going to gain more and more confidence as that time passes, and you're going to have more opportunity to try and get in the head of the striker.
Certainly a theme in that game as well, isn't there, with penalties after what we saw in 2010. It was Fernando Muslera who was the goalkeeper on that occasion when Asamoah Gyan whacked the crossbar. He didn't make a save, but they did mention Muslera at the end for the fact that it was going to be his last World Cup, most likely. And at the very moment that they mentioned him, you then saw him berating the fourth official, going absolutely nuts in the fourth official's face and actually pushing him away. It might have been the linesman or the assistant referee, sorry, but either way, he just went bonkers, Muslera.
Yeah, well, I think you could see how much it hurt them. I mean, obviously, the pictures of Suarez certainly doing the rounds, etc. Like, it, yeah, look, of course, it must have been so difficult. I can imagine playing in that moment, especially when you know you've got 10 minutes to get that goal at the end or whatever it was, where, you know, strangely the games didn't quite align, largely due to obviously added time being given, etc. But when you got 10 minutes and they did have chances, and I know we're going to touch on it shortly, but, you know, the save, in fact, we'll mention the couple of great saves that Ziggy made. I mean, the one he made full stretch down to his right, I didn't feel he quite got enough credit for that. You know, that was in the, I think it was in the 89th minute, 90th minute, but it must be so frustrating. You could see Suarez on the side, you could see all the players, and the players just looked dead on their feet the last 10 minutes, just could not get that breakthrough. No, and it must be tough, because the moment that final whistle goes and you know that you're out of the tournament, and of course emotions running high. I mean, the scenes weren't great at the end, it's fair to say, when they're going down the tunnel. I'm sure that there'll be something said about that in the coming day or two, but similarly, I get it. You know, I've been in there. I'm sure every goalkeeper listening in, you've been there at times when you're angry, you know, a couple of decisions didn't go their way. I think in particular the penalty shout towards the end. Yeah, look, I do understand it. And at the same time, I'm sure after the fact, I'm sure today when it's all settled down a bit, they might look back on that and be a little bit doubtful as to whether that was the right way to go about things.
Small stat before we move on.
You love one.
So Martin Silva set a new record as the goalkeeper to make the most appearances as a substitute goalkeeper at the World Cup yesterday. He has been on the bench 16 times for Uruguay from 2010 through to 2022.
Wow. That is quite an interesting stat, actually.
Isn't it?
Do you know, every now and then you come up with something. And no, I like that one. That's good.
The three goalkeepers following him with 14 appearances. Can you name any of those?
Oh, here we go. Are any of them English?
No.
Give me a nationality. That always helps.
Okay. We've got a Belgian, an Italian, and a German.
Oh, a Belgian, an Italian.
I think there's only really a chance you'll get one of these, to be honest.
Okay, which one am I likely to get?
The Belgian.
Oh, now I feel like I really should get it.
Still playing.
And this is going to bug me. Mignolet.
Correct. Very good.
Okay, excellent. The other two, unlikely. Go on, who are they?
Yeah. Ivano Bordon of Italy, who I'm not aware of, to be fair, and Ike Immel of Germany, who I want to say played for Man City, didn't he, in the Premier League?
Yeah, that's correct. I do believe you're right in that. Yeah, no, that was one. Unlikely I'd have got that, but I think if we'd have, you know, maybe taken our time and really bored the listeners over a period of this podcast, I might have got that.
Moving on to the fact that, of course, both Ziggy and Rochette are going home. Going on are Diogo Costa and Kim Sung-hyo, the goalkeeper we've not yet spoken about for South Korea. So incredible scenes late on in this one. Great to see him celebrating. He did make a very good one-on-one save from Ronaldo in the first half. And I want to talk about this because it was inconsequential as it was given offside. But where do we stand with these saves now? Do they still count? Do they not count? Do we talk about them?
I think they have to still count. Well, actually, we've mentioned the one from Ziggy. That was offside as well as an example. And yeah, look, I'm still going to count it in the fact that if I was a goalkeeper, that is still very much going on my highlight reel.
And a quick word on Diogo Costa too. So not from yesterday's game, but the win over Uruguay a few days prior. So a really good spread to deny Rodrigo Bentancur. Not seen that way, however, by Graeme Souness and Joe Cole. There was an element of luck, apparently, and a dreadful miss, according to Cole.
Yeah, frustrated me this. And, well, the interesting one is, and I know we're going to touch on this save later on, was Danny Ward. When he came out early in the England game, very, very similar, came out very quickly, got to within a yard or two and produced a good spread. And actually, Jermaine Genus gave some really good punditry on that in particular, where he did really compliment Danny Ward on the way in which he closed the angle and got out so quickly and got near enough to the ball, which made it difficult for, I think it was Rashford, wasn't it? I think who had the attempt. But it's just funny, very, very similar situation, very similar top save, top spread, and how it can be seen so differently. Now, the bit I don't mind is when it's coming from a striker, I get that they'll be then, you know, we say this all the time on this podcast, by all means, do it from your perspective. You're a striker, you were a striker, so you're seeing it where could he have gone round him? Could he have slotted it in the corner? Could he have done this, that, the other? That's fine. But then I think similarly, you have to give credit to the goalkeeper because he's made it tough. You know, if he was a couple of yards deeper, he makes that finish that bit easier, which actually also, I think we mentioned on a previous podcast, I can't think of the goalkeeper now, but that was a great example where he was maybe a couple of yards deeper, made it a little bit easier for the striker. But I think here, certainly with Costa, I thought the speed that he came off his line, and you actually look point of impact, he spread. I think even if the striker plays it into the corner, there's still a chance that he makes a save with his feet. He spread in such a way as well that point of impact, he's low enough so that it makes it tough to get through the legs. That's always the one you can be a bit vulnerable in this situation, is that you come out, you spread, legs everywhere, arms everywhere, but actually you leave a massive hole between your legs which they can then fire it through. But in this case, I thought his spread was excellent.
Okay, we'll hop, skip and jump to the next bout of drama in Group E, Japan v Spain, Costa Rica v Germany. There was all sorts going on here. So let's focus first on two incredible saves in the Costa Rica-Germany game. One apiece from Manuel Neuer and Keylor Navas, both at the time at crucial moments of the game for either side.
Yeah, both very good. I thought Manuel Neuer took up a good position, ball coming on the angle, and it struck really hard. I thought the fact that he stands up, and Manuel Neuer is pretty good at this, he holds a really good set position, and speed reactions were very good to get the flick over the bar. But I think that Navas, for me, this is one of the saves, if not the save of the tournament. I thought the speed at which he got across the goal, in the end, I think it hits his head and he goes over the bar, but it's just the way in which he gets across the goal, gets as close as he can to the ball, spreads as well as he can, and it is a phenomenal save. That's 9 times out of 10 that ends up in the back of the net. It reminds me of a save. In fact, I think, there you go, we just mentioned him previously. I think Mignolet is going to get another mention. In fact, no, it wasn't Mignolet. Oh, I've just mixed up two goalkeepers. It was Kuchak. Do you remember the famous Kuchak save? I think it was against...
For Wigan.
It might have been for West Brom.
Was it for Wigan?
For Wigan, sorry, against West Brom. I'm pretty sure it was. And again, I might be miles off with this. But you remember the one where he's come across and I think it got save of the season,
yeah, you're, sorry,
from memory. I mean, I'm talking about...
You're right. It was for... He never played for Wigan. I think it was for West Brom, yes, against Wigan. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I'm talking about being a really famous save. We can't even remember it. But a lot of similarities where, and I love these saves. And as a goalkeeper, these are kind of one of those saves you make once or twice in your career. Ball squared across the six. And it is one of those where, like I say, 99 times out of 100, this ends up in the back of the net. But you have to go for it. You have to turn across, get across quickly, throw yourself fully, and just hope. And in fairness to him, it was the speed at which he was able to get across and throw himself and get himself close enough that allowed him to make the save.
So next we'll flip to Unai Simon. So he was questioned quite heavily for the equaliser from Japan's Ritsu Doan and for his propensity for playing out from the back. Now, Alan McCoist not happy, Mark Pugac not happy, Gary Neville not happy, John Champion not happy, and he wasn't even commentating on that game. Just let's talk about this from Simon, because plenty has been spoken about. There's been calls for David Raya, for Robert Sanchez to now replace Simon. There's been calls for David De Gea to have been in the squad instead of Simon. Where are we at with this one?
Right, so the goal itself, he'll be a little bit disappointed with it. No one really touched on exactly why. For me, I think he's ever so slightly out of position. I think he's undercovered the near side, you know, and that's quite unusual because it's normally the other way around that we mention quite a lot. But if anything, when you look at the point of impact, he is slightly too far over, which leaves a big gap at the near side. Look, the ball's moving. It's not an easy one to deal with in that it's struck at pace, no real spin on the ball. It's moving a little bit. That being said, you know, I think ordinarily he gets to his left, gets two hands, gets around the post. I think if he takes up a slightly better position, it makes the save even easier. But it is just the fact, of course, when it's going a yard or so inside the post and he's not able to get the hands and get it around the post, I understand why people are questioning that. In terms of playing out, I don't fully agree. And the reason being, even the goal before that, they've slightly questioned him in that it was his ball out to the left back initially. But you actually look at the play before then, and there's a few examples of this in the game where, because of the way in which Spain wants to play, you can see there's a lot of pressure on him keeping the ball. So many times the ball comes back, he's always taking a touch. Yeah, again, majority of the time he's been finding his man very well. There was one example he's had to cut back almost onto the goal line to then fire it out to the right back, which he did successfully. Now, I know when you look at it, it kind of could be for a second a heart and mouth moment where, you know, you're turning back towards your goal line. Of course, there's a risk to that, but he did it successfully, and I think he has on the whole played out really well. So my guess is this is one of those situations where commentators might look at it, they don't fully understand it, but no doubt the Spanish coaching team, the Spanish goalkeeper coach, Spanish manager will be very happy with that aspect of his game. But of course, it's one of those as well that you'll often see when a goalkeeper maybe can do better for a goal. It's amazing how they then group other things into the conversation almost to help build an argument. And I just felt it was that. If you take that goal out of it, I think then on the whole, the display's been pretty solid. Now, do they change it for the next game? I'd be surprised if they do. I think when you've made a decision to go with a goalkeeper in the way that they have, and look, he's a top goalkeeper, he's ahead of Rob Sanchez and David Raya for a reason, I don't think they change it based on that one goal.
And I don't think he looks uncomfortable on the ball either. They seem to be missing that. It's not that he looks uncomfortable on the ball. It's just sometimes when you play out from the back, you are susceptible to being caught by the press. And the times where he has potentially almost lost possession, he's managed to maintain possession and then execute the pass. Again, if we put that to a midfielder, striker, a defender, the same thing happens. No one says anything because they've maintained possession. It's just maybe a slightly dodgy touch. But with a goalkeeper, of course, it's amplified. There was also this obsession throughout that game between Spain and Japan that Spain were continuing to play it rather than launching it into the box. And I thought, wow, I mean, if that isn't an indictment of archaic commentary, I do not know what is. And there was also a briefing by FIFA's technical committee last week, which showed that in 2018, at the World Cup in 2018, goalkeepers had received the ball from their outfield teammates 443 times after the first two rounds of group games. In Qatar, at the same stage, that number had increased to 726. So clearly a pattern here. Also, the starting position of the goalkeeper is 1 meter higher up the pitch than it was in Russia.
Again, another couple of great stats. You're full of them today, aren't you, Just? But no, it's another good point, though, because, again, here you go, even law of averages, you know, near enough double the goalkeeper's receiving the ball because they are keeping possession of the ball. And this is the way in which teams, they know that mathematically, scientifically, this is the way in which you can have a better chance of success. It's as simple as that. And of course, you're keeping possession of the ball that much more often, you're going to build more attacks, you're going to be that much more effective in how you play. And they've chosen, look, that'll be the reason, of course, they've chosen Unai Simon. Now, that's nothing against Rob Sanchez and David Rea, who are both very good, but it could be an argument as to why David De Gea is not in the squad, because they might see an Unai Simon, a David Rea, a Rob Sanchez at being that little bit better in terms of keeping the football. And because that is the way they play, and, you know, we could relate this to Manchester United, they don't play anywhere near as much. I know they're trying to a bit more now under the new manager, but they don't play any, certainly they haven't done in the last couple of years, played anywhere near as much as this Spanish team does. So Unai Simon, I'd love to see the stats for him specifically in terms of actually keeping the ball, because as much as they might give him a little bit of stick, where I give that example where he's turned back to his goal line, the reason I don't mind this as well, the fact that he kept possession was fantastic, because he does actually clip it out to the right back who chests it down and they do keep possession of the football. But even if he didn't, even if he put it over his head, for me, that was a realization of he's got the ball, he's looking, he's realized it's too dangerous, at which point he takes it out of trouble and then clips it down the line and potentially clips it out of play. And that's for me where we've said that so many times on the podcast. I think as long as you've got that moment of realization where you know you're in trouble, and you know that you potentially have to do something different, then you've got the nice balance. You're going to find your teammate more often than not, but when you don't, you know when that moment comes that maybe you go a bit longer or you just get it out of danger. And then there was another good example actually over the last few days, which again, I know we're going to talk about, which was the Canadian goalkeeper, Borjan, who had a similar but different moment where it was a bad back pass to him and he ends up getting caught in two minds where he doesn't know whether to play, doesn't know whether to clear it. In the end, does neither, does something in between and unfortunately gives away possession and quite a simple finish for the attacking player. So yeah, going back to Simon, I don't mind how he's playing because I do think he's got that trigger where he's very good with his feet. He knows when to keep the ball, but I think he does have that trigger to know when it's just a bit too dangerous.
Right, we'll flip back to Neuer for the two goals conceded against Costa Rica before we just tail off this dramatic couple of days in the World Cup. Your thoughts on those two?
Yeah, look, I think they're both difficult. They don't look good, either of them, I'll say that. I think the first one where the ball's, it looks like at first glance, you think, oh, why doesn't he pick it up? Why doesn't he do a pickup technique? It's a firm header from 7 or 8 yards. But when you actually see it from behind the goal, the reason this is tough, and again, goalkeepers can relate, he's turned off the post. He's got himself into a decent enough set position, but his weight is ever so slightly on his right-hand side because he's moving to his right. And the header comes in and it's ever so slightly to his left. So it doesn't allow him to do a standard scoop pickup technique. So effectively what he's done is just got his hands to it to make sure he keeps it out of the net, but of course it pops out and he's not able to get on the rebound. So it doesn't look great, but in terms of an error rating for me, that would be quite low. And similarly with the second one, it's one of those horrible ones where the ball's popped up, it's only a few yards away from him, it's not close enough for him to come and claim, but similarly he doesn't want to stay on his line and just allow it to play out, wants to come and try and affect it and try and spread. And what I'd say is the only thing maybe he doesn't do particularly well is the technique he uses when he comes out to affect play, because he kind of jumps and almost does a star jump. And look, when you see how it plays out in hindsight, that probably wasn't the right technique to use in that moment. But similarly, I also know why exactly he's tried to engage in that moment, because the ball was just a little bit too close for him to stay on his line and not try and affect play.
Wojciech Szczęsny, another penalty save. Two in succession now. This one from Lionel Messi. Incredible save, this.
How was this given, first and foremost, by the way? I mean, do we talk about that? Because I think that is goalkeeping related. But my God, I mean, how is that given? He's come for a cross, hasn't quite got there. And I think his fingertip brushed Messi's cheek, I think. I mean, it was just unbelievable that the ref looked at it for so long and came to the decision that he did.
Did you see that Szczęsny actually said after the game that while the VAR check was going on, he bet Lionel Messi €100 and said, I'll bet you €100 now, this will be overturned. It won't be a penalty.
Yeah, I saw that. And if I was Lionel Messi, I wouldn't have taken that bet because it should not have been given. If this is given, the problem is if it's given, you think of the amount of examples we've spoke about over time where a goalkeeper, because it's even worse when a goalkeeper comes and misjudges it and maybe slightly catches a player. And more often than not, that's not given. But this, he's not even tried to touch the player. He's tried to get the cross, hasn't got the cross. And I say it's the smallest of contacts, like he barely touched him. Just a bizarre decision. How that they were even told the ref to go and look at the monitor was bizarre to me. And then for the ref to go over there, but then I guess this comes back to the point, when the ref's told to look at the monitor, the pressure they'll then feel that almost they need to give it. And it is one of those situations, but I was just really hoping that he'd go over there and see sense, but he didn't. That being said, justice was served. I mean, it is a great save, really, really good save. And I know we said it on a previous pod, but for me, in terms of mentality, Szczęsny's got one of the best mentalities. You know, as much as you could dig into his game and look at the attributes he's got and what he's good at and what he could be better at and so on and so forth, one of the biggest things for me is that he is a winner. You know, in those situations, he relishes those situations. And again, you look at him, he looked confident. He's got a nice strategy on the line, does a little shimmy, a little fake to the right, and then gets himself to the left, and just a really powerful dive. And the coordination needed as well, because it's such a quick hand to get his top hand to this and to angle it away from goal. Such a tough technique to do, but brilliant save.
Another quick stat, although I can't take any credit for this one because it was read out by Gary Lineker after the game, but 4 of the last 6 penalties faced by Polish goalkeepers at World Cups have been saved. 2 from Jan Tomaszewski and now 2 from Szczęsny. That's 5 from 14 in his time at Juventus too, so very decent from the spot is Szczęsny. But we'll move on to England, who comfortably beat Wales, and Danny Ward attracting much attention again, although it does seem like he courts attention whenever he concedes a goal these days. It feels like he just needs to sneeze and people will be slagging him off. He denied Marcus Rashford in the first half. You mentioned it earlier, quick reactions there, but he conceded two in the second half. The free kick being the main talking point. Just before I come to you, we did have a WhatsApp in from Adam Travers who said, I feel sorry for Danny Ward versus England. He had a middling start to the season in the Premier League. Should have been Wales number one. Chucked in after a red. Makes a great save in the first half and second half. Doesn't need to move on the free kick and should go with his feet on the second.
Yeah. Look, it's if I'm to look at the free kick, he will be disappointed. It's just the movement prior. I mean, look, they had a lot of men in front of the ball. England have obviously worked on this and it's a clever free kick because they've tried to block the view of the goalkeeper. It's just when you see it from behind the goal and you see that he's edging, and then eventually has to go back the way it came. And as much as, of course, I'll always stick up for goalkeepers where I feel it's right to, but I think it's just that. I think when you're taking up a position on a free kick and you've got your wall set up, you need to be so strong in your position. You know, and you need to say, right, this is the area that I can cover. Look, Rashford, you put it over the wall and you put it into the top corner, it's a goal. And I'll give you that because it's such a tough technique to do. But if you're putting it my side, I'm confident I'll save it. If you're putting it, you know, anywhere that's not within a yard of the further post or the post to his right, then again, you've got a chance of scoring. But yeah, it's just a frustrating one that he's tried to read it. Of course, Rashford is a top player, so there is a chance that he puts this over the wall and puts it into the top corner. So I know why he's reading it, but similarly, the moment that he then goes back the side that he was, it's not right in the corner. It's a lovely technique, like the actual strike of the ball, very little spin, so fast, and it has really arrowed into that corner. But similarly, if you look at the point at which it crosses the line, it's probably a yard inside the post, it's probably a yard under the bar. So that as a position, it had Danny Ward have just been really strong in his positioning, I think he makes a comfortable save here.
Is that a habit that is almost ingrained in goalkeepers? Because you see it a lot at free kicks, right? It's
tough because, and again, I suppose I speak from personal experience. And of course, the players I was playing against, although I had obviously a little bit of experience at the top level, the players I was playing against weren't of the level of what they're facing now. So I get why some guess and I get why some might edge across because, yeah, look, the quality that you're coming up against, whereas when I played, it might be 1 in 10 that they put it over the wall and in the top corner. Now it's 4 in 10, you know. So there is often a feeling of, well, I need to try and predict what he's doing, like you would do on a penalty almost, you know. And you get it on a penalty because, of course, there's no wall. It is 12 yards out. And if you don't go early, you probably won't save it. But I still think on a free kick, as goalkeepers, we just have to accept that if they are going to whip it over the wall and put it in the top corner, as much as they're doing it more frequently now, I think we've got to be careful to start guessing, because the moment we start to edge across, yeah, you look at the... It's such an easier finish then for Rashford, and it's obviously not an easy finish, but you know what I mean? It's such an easier finish when you're not having to put it over a wall and you're able just to fire it into a corner that's reasonably empty. Yeah, a player of his quality will do that more often than not. And if anything, it's then the mind games that play out beforehand, because Rashford, he's obviously already made his mind up to do this. He's already predicted that Danny Ward's going to start to gamble. Now, that might be because he's watched previous footage. It might just be that in that moment, he's decided, I'm just going to fire it in that top corner and see if I get lucky. But however it's worked out, Rashford certainly won the mind games between the two.
Okay, just a final few bits to finish up on. Thibaut Courtois, 100th cap and only the 7th Belgian to reach that landmark. He's the first goalkeeper to reach the landmark. That's 50 clean sheets and 100 for him now. Such an impressive record there. Alisson, still yet to make a save at the tournament, believe it or not. Edison in against Cameroon yesterday. Some lovely ball playing from him, as you'd expect, but a 1-0 loss for Brazil. No Jan Sommer in for Switzerland. I cannot remember the last time that happened at a major tournament. Gregor Kobel in for just his 4th cap. The Swiss going through, of course. And I just wanted to get your take on this. There was an example for me of the ball running in the game between Morocco and Canada. Bono just had he was back in, of course. He just had a moment where it almost evaded him. And I feel like I've noticed that a lot. And I don't know whether that ties into the fact that this seems to be a more slippery ball. The ball does seem to run quite a lot. It's quite fast on the turf.
Yeah, I would agree. I guess without, like you say, other than what we mentioned on the previous pod, that a few of the goalkeepers that I spoke to have really commented on the fact that whether it's the coating on the ball or whatever it is, but certainly when you're watching the games, the ball does seem to be moving in a slightly different way to what we might see in a Premier League game. So look, the chances are it is that. Now, whether that adds to the game or not. I'm not sure. Like, I get that a lot of these advantages or a lot of these changes are made in order to make the game quicker, to make it that bit easier to move the football. Realistically, probably easier to score goals, because that's, of course, what the organisers would want. But it certainly does seem to be moving ever so slightly differently.
And we'll just do a quick one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper.
So Milan Borjan, not just for the opening goal conceded, you've mentioned that already, but just for an animated last 5 minutes or so, I really felt for him. It's highly likely to be his one and only World Cup, but it was all going off in that last 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was. He's whipped a great crossing, it's fair to say. It was really, really good cross that he's put in. But yeah, no, just a crazy game for him in that, as you mentioned, we touched on the goal before, which I do feel for him because it was a poor back pass. He's obviously looking to keep possession of the ball, gets a little bit caught in two minds. It's that horrible moment where he's probably thinking, do I just kick it? Do I just clear it? And then he's thinking, do I pass it? Then all of a sudden he's done neither. And of course it has ended up in the back of the net. Then, you know, they're frantically trying to get a goal towards the end. He's come up for a corner. He's ended up getting the ball whipped in a good cross. Then he's ended up dropping. And there was a moment where he's just tried to fire it back into the box on the volley and all looked a bit messy. But yeah, look, it's one of them. And I mentioned earlier about Uruguay in the last few minutes and just how the emotions can be. And it is that. The word I'd use is frantic. You know, you desperately want to do something. And when you are in the dying embers of a game, you know, you don't care how. You just want to try and find a way to get the ball near the goal and somehow get that goal. And certainly in this case, Borjan was, credit to him, he was doing everything he possibly could, but it certainly wasn't his day.
Right, Richard, that's very nearly us. I have said, haven't I, that I'm going to produce a stat with each podcast throughout this tournament. So I've got one quick one for you, okay?
Go on.
The goalkeepers to have made the most saves so far, just a nice and simple one. Who do you think it is, top of the pile?
I would go with... go on. No, I actually do not know. Go on.
I would say, by the way, I've looked at various stats sites and I wasn't happy with what they produced. So I did my own stat-based research on this. So this is who I'm saying is top of the charts for saves. And it's Chesney with 19 saves thus far. Milinkovic-Savic with 16. Alois with 15. Gonda and Ziggy with 12. And Keylor Navas with 11. We are, of course, saying goodbye to some of those goalkeepers. In total, we're saying goodbye to Hernan Galindez, Moshel Basham and Saïd Ausheib, Alireza Byron-Vand and Hossein Hosseini, Wayne Hennessy and Danny Ward, Guillermo Ochoa, Mohamed Alois, Eamon Dahman, Kasper Schmeichel, of course, Manuel Neuer, Keylor Navas, Thibaut Courtois, Milan Borjan, Andre Onana and David Zapassi, Sergio Rochette, and Lawrence Ati-Zigi. By the way, there are four examples of teams there using two goalkeepers. When you've just played three games, it's amazing how that change can still happen.
Yeah, more so now, it feels like. And again, I know we've mentioned this in loads of pods recently, that the amount of changes in the English League, Championship League One in particular. But yeah, it does seem like it's not quite such a rarity anymore.
Just a quick word on Andre Onana as well, because he was replaced, as I mentioned there, by David Zapassi for the final two games of the group games. Now, he was omitted from the squad for the second game, just listed as absent. Naturally, the rumour mill went into overdrive because Zapassi came in. Quite a change of style in goalkeeper to Onana in terms of having the ball at his feet, more so than anything else. Now, the official line from Cameroon was that he was temporarily suspended from the group for disciplinary reasons. There are a bunch of suggestions here. One being that Rigobert Song wanted to play more conservatively out from the back. Apparently in training, he said this is an Ajax to Onana. That's unsubstantiated. And apparently also unsubstantiated is the fact that Onana wasn't overly confident with the men in front of him and felt like he was actually more accomplished with the ball at his feet. So in the end, he didn't get sent home. He actually decided, I think, to go home, or it was a mix of the two. What do you make of that whole situation?
Yeah, it doesn't sound great. I mean, you do hear these, you know, there was the classic one, wasn't there, with Roy Keane, McCarthy, Ireland, whatever, where, yeah, look, you can imagine you're away in a camp for however long, and if there are certain tensions and you've got certain big characters, then things happen. And as you say, there'll be lots of rumours that come out. It'd be interesting if we know exactly what happened, whether Onana comes out himself and actually says exactly what it was. But yeah, my guess is it's probably something as simple as that. You're away with a bunch of players, managers, etc. for quite a period of time. And sometimes if there is a clash of personalities or things don't quite work, then you often see that things like this happen.
And to finally finish, it wouldn't be a podcast, a Between the Sticks, during a major international tournament without one of these.
Commentary Corner.
And it's our good friend Lee Dixon again, Richard. So this was after Sam Matterface had listed the oldest players to play at a World Cup. Assam El Haddari, of course, in 2018 for Egypt, being the eldest. This was in the game last night between Brazil and Cameroon. There was a very long pause, wasn't there, before Lee Dixon said, "I do have my opinion on goalkeepers, though. I'm sure I'm going to get some criticism from my mate Dave Seaman about it, but they don't put... It's all concentration, isn't it? They stand. I know they've got to jump about and dive. It's not running about, is it?"
Amazing. Lee Dixonosaur, as I've now named him. Oh my God. Just, yeah, look, I don't know whether I need to comment on this, but yeah, no, that's right. That's right, Lee. We just play head tennis, actually, when we train. We just play a bit of head tennis, bit of patter cake. You know, don't really need to run around. So, you know, we enjoy our lunch, have a really good lunch. Sometimes go in the gym, you know, sometimes just play a bit of throw head catch. And then, yeah, that's it, really. I don't know why more people don't choose to be a goalkeeper.
To be fair, he has said, I think the hardest, well, not to be fair, but to comment on what you're saying about training, he did say the hardest for goalkeepers is the training they do, more so than the games.
Yeah. Well, look, in terms of the physical impact, of course, a goalkeeper to be as explosive, athletic, like that doesn't happen by accident. There's so many different forms of training to be, you know, aesthetically the most pleasing member of a team. Like you actually look at what a goalkeeper does, the movement a goalkeeper has to make. It's so much more expansive than what an outfield player does. You know, there's so much more to it, so much more intricate. So that doesn't just happen by accident. There's a lot of different things you would do off the field in order to be able to be as capable as these goalkeepers are. So just to downplay it like that, you know, it's just concentration, isn't it? Yeah, that's it, Lee. It's just concentration. I'm really good at concentrating. That's why I made it as a professional goalkeeper. Just a real lack again of appreciation of the position. It's just a silly comment, really. But again, it's probably what we said before, the amount of outfield players, ex-outfield players that do say these little comments without really thinking about it. And again, it's just a bit disrespectful, really.
Okay, that's us done. The round of 16 is due to commence later this afternoon between Netherlands and the USA. And the last of those is on Tuesday. So hopefully, all things considered, Wednesday we'll be back for another dose of Between the Sticks. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.